His Divine Grace, Silesi Bhakti Vedanta Swami Prabhupada ki jai. Shantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Nitai Gopremanande Hari Hari Gol Samaveta Bhakta Vrinda ki jai. All grace to the assembled devotee. All grace to the assembled devotee. All grace to the assembled devotees. All grace to Sri Sri Guru Gauranga. Om Namah Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namah Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namah Bhagavate Vasudevaya. वासुदेवाय ॐ नमः भगवते वासुदेवाय Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 2, Chapter 10. Bhagavatam is the answer to all questions. Text number 10. Word meanings, Purushaha, the Supreme Person, Paramatma, Andam, the universes, Vinirvidya, making them each separately situated, Yada, when, Asau, the same, Saha, he, the Lord, Vinirgataha, came out, Atmanaha, of himself, Ayanam, lying in place, Anvichchan, desiring, Apaha, water, Asrakshit, created, Suchihi, the most pure, Suchihi, transcendental. Purusham dam vinirvidya yadaso sa vinirgata atmano yanam anvichyan aposakshich chuchi shuchi Purushandam vinirvidya Yudasa sa vinirgata Atmanoyanam anvichchan Aposakshit shuchi shuchi Purushandam vinirvidya Yadasa sa vinirgata Atmano yanaman vichyan Aposrasi chuchi chuchi Purushandam vinirvidya Translation. After separating the different universes, the gigantic universal form of the Lord, Mahavishnu, which came out of the causal ocean, the place of appearance for the first Purusha avatar, entered into each of the separate universes, desiring to lie on the created transcendental water, Garbhodaka. Srila Prabhupada's purport. I'm doing half of the purport today. I've been assigned. After analysis of the living entities and the Supreme Lord, Paramatma, the independent source of all other living beings, Srila Shukadeva Goswami is now presenting the prime necessity for devotional service to the Lord, which is the only occupational business of all living entities. The Supreme Lord, Sri Krishna, and all his plenary portions and extensions of plenary portions are non-different from one another, and thus the supreme independence is in each and every one of them. In order to prove this, Shukadeva Goswami, as promised to King Parikshit, describes herein the independence of the Purusha Avatar personality of Godhead, even in the sphere of the material creation. Such activities of the Lord are also transcendental, and therefore they are also lila, or pastimes, of the Absolute Lord. Such pastimes of the Lord are very conducive to the hearers for self-realization in the field of devotional service. Some may argue, why not then relish the transcendental lila of the Lord as exhibited in the land of Mathura and Vrindavan, which are sweeter than anything in the world? Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur replies that the pastimes of the Lord in Vrindavan are meant to be relished by advanced devotees of the Lord. Neophyte devotees will misunderstand such supreme transcendental activities of the Lord, and therefore the Lord's pastimes in the material sphere related to creation, maintenance, and destruction are very relishable by the prakrita, or mundane, devotees of the Lord. As the yoga system mainly based on bodily exercises is meant for the person who is too much attached to the bodily conception of existence, similarly, the Lord's pastimes related to the creation and destruction of the material world are for those who are too materially attached. For such mundane creatures, the functions of the body and the functions of the cosmic world through physical laws in relationship with the Lord are also therefore included in understanding of the lawmaker, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The scientists explain the material functions by so many technological terms of material law, but such blind scientists forget the lawmaker. The Srimad Bhagavatam points out the lawmaker. One should not be amazed by the mechanical arrangement of the complicated engine or dynamo, but one should praise the engineer who creates such a wonderful working machine. That is the difference between the devotee and the non-devotee. Devotees are always full with praising the Lord, who directs the physical laws. In the Bhagavad Gita 9:10, the direction of the Lord upon the material nature is described as follows. Maya yakshena prakriti suyate sacharacharam hetunanena kanteya jagadvi parivartate. The material nature full of physical laws is one of my different energies. Therefore it is neither independent nor blind. Because I am transcendentally all-powerful, simply by my glancing over material nature, the physical laws of nature work so wonderfully. The actions and reactions of the physical laws work on that account, and thus the material world is created, maintained, and annihilated again and again. That's it for today. Tomorrow we'll pick up the report. Om Agyanatimirandhasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshuram Militam Nena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. Translation again. After separating the different universes, the gigantic universal form of the Lord, Mahavishnu, which came out of the causal ocean, the place of appearance for the first Purusha, entered into each of the separate universes, desiring to lie on the created transcendental water, Garbhodaka. And here the Prabhupada is calling, well, he's translating, a gigantic universal form. It just says Purusha. So Purusha, we know, sometimes we hear Virat Purusha, the material world, is a kind of imagined form of the Lord. But Prabhupada takes it here as Mahavishnu. So what is being said here? It just says Mahavishnu, he was in the causal ocean, because he creates all the universe, he's lying in the causal ocean, which is spiritual. And from there, so many universes are coming out of his pores of his body. And then he's entering into each one of those universes as Garbha Dakshaya Vishnu. So that's what this verse is saying. He desired to lie on the created transcendental water. Of course, he doesn't lie directly on the water. He lies on Ananta Sheshanaga, his serpent bed. And he enjoys in that way. The Prabhupada begins his purport. I'm not quite sure why he does it this way, actually. He says, Shukadev Goswami is now presenting the prime necessity for devotional service to the Lord, which is the only occupational business of all living entities. But this section of the Bhagavatam is not directly about devotional service at all. It's actually about the universal form of the Lord. That's what's coming up here. Of course, Prabhupada is seeing devotional service everywhere. And what is being done here, partly, we just went through these verses about adhyatmik, adhidaivik, and adhibhautik. What is that about? So that's about the demigods, the living entity in the body, and the body itself, these three things. So the point of bringing this up, after these listing of the 10 subjects of the Srimad Bhagavatam, was to distinguish these aspects of the material world from the independent Purusha. That's the idea. The point, I think it was in the last verse, it says that these, one can't act without the other. All three are necessary, so they're interdependent. The adiyatmik, adidaivik, and adibhautik. Again, it's the body, which is controlled by these adidaivik demigods, which are controlling the body. And then the jiva is in, and he's experiencing. So each one of them doesn't have anything to do unless the other two are there. So the idea is that they're not independent. So now we're hearing about this, the Purusha, and the Purusha is independent. And this is all in the context of understanding that there are 9 topics of the Bhagavatam in support of our understanding the 10th, which is the Ashraya. So we're talking in the context of understanding the Ashraya. The Ashraya, the shelter of everything, is completely independent. So partly how we see his independence by, of course, how powerful he is. Mahavishnu is producing universes from the hair holes of his body. And now we'll hear the section that's coming up now is describing some of the creation, how it's unfolding, the different elements of this material world, how they're unfolding. So in this, the acharyas, the commentators, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur and Jiva Goswami, they say a little something about the context of this verse that's coming up today. Why is Shukadev speaking, right? Yeah. Shukadev Goswami, what is he doing here exactly? So it says here, this is from Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. He says, now Shukadev speaks in order to explain a topic he promised earlier in the Bhagavatam. He said, in 2.9.46, I will explain what you asked me concerning how this universe arose from the universal form. So he's saying back in 2.9.46, Shukadev said this, I'll answer your question. You asked about how the universe arose from the universal form. And then actually Bhanu Swami, in his translation of this, he gives a footnote. And he says, he's explaining where Parikshit asked the question. So we see how we have these different steps here. I'm always amazed at the acharyas, how they remember all these things from all these different parts of the Bhagavatam and put them all together, sometimes extending over long separation. The question is asked, and then it's answered, you know, three or four chapters later. And the commentator will say now, which is what we're seeing here, is that he's answering this question that was asked back in the 8th chapter. So that verse is 2.8.11, which I'll look up here, since it's, fortunately, it's in this volume of the Bhagavatam. Now, that chapter is called Questions by King Parikshit. 2.8.11. He asked, among his many questions, O learned Brahmana, so Parikshit is asking Shukadev, O learned Brahmana, it was formerly explained that all the planets of the universe with their respective governors are situated in the different parts of the gigantic body of the Virat Purusha. I have also heard that the different planetary systems are supposed to be in the gigantic body of the Virat Purusha. But what is their actual position? Will you please explain that? Now, this is different, interesting, because it sounds like the two sentences are saying the same thing. It was formerly explained that all the planets of the universe, with their respective governors, are situated in the different parts of the gigantic body of the Virat Purusha. I have also heard that the different planetary systems are supposed to be in the gigantic body of the Virat Purusha. What is their actual position? So I'm not exactly sure why it's stated twice. It seems like unless I'm missing something here. Anyway, the idea is you mentioned that the planets are in the body of the Virat Purusha or make up the body of the Virat Purusha. So he's asking for an explanation. And again, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur is saying that in the 9th chapter, which we just read, Shukadev said, okay, I'm going to answer that question for you. That's coming up. And now he's actually starting to answer it. That's the context of today's verse. Now here's something, this is from Jiva Goswami, this same idea. Or he's also giving some information about the context. He says, in order to praise of today's verse, in order to praise the Ashraya, the supreme form of Swayam Bhagavan, the powers of the Purusha, his Ansha, are described. He arises from Bhagavan. So the Ashraya really is Bhagavan. And from Bhagavan there are so many energies coming, so many powers, and he says here. So he's going to talk about the Purusha. Now again, the Purusha sometimes means the Purusha avatars, Mahavishnu, Garbhadakshay Vishnu, and Kshirbhakshay Vishnu, they're called Purusha. But the Virat Purusha, we also hear. So, of course, Purusha means person or man. It's masculine, the Purusha. Purusha and Prakriti, of course. Purusha is masculine, Prakriti is feminine. So when we hear the word Purusha, it can mean Virat Purusha or one of the three Purushas involved with the material world. So then he quotes, Jiva Goswami quotes from the 2.6.42, Mahavishnu, an expansion of the Lord of Vaikuntha, is time, swabhava, effect and cause, mahatattva, the five gross elements, false ego, the three gunas, the senses, the universal form, the totality of jivas, the individual jivas as non-moving and moving beings. All these are related to the Supreme Lord. And Jiva Goswami so quotes that verse. He says that Mahavishnu is all of these things. And he's the Lord, an expansion of the Lord of Vaikuntha. So this all unfolds, of course. It begins with Lord Balaram, or begins with Krishna, then Balaram, then from Balaram everything expands. Sankarshan, the Chaturvyuha, then a second Chaturvyuha. Then from Sankarshan of the second Chaturvyuha, Mahavishnu arises. Narayan, or Narayan is there, and then Mahavishnu. So here, Jiva Goswami continues, having merged the universe within himself, he separated it out from himself. So that's referring to today's verse. He separated the universe out from himself. Or he separated himself from Bhagavan, the place of his manifestation, Andam. That's a word in the verse today, Andam. And came out separately, Vinirgataha. He created all the elements, such as earth, such as water. Earth is included in the creations. So this Two 642 explains about Mahavishnu. So he's giving this connection again. So the whole point, the point here is that there's a lot of discussion about the first two cantos, especially deal a lot with creation. Actually, the third canto too, when Maitreya start and Vidura meet, and Vidura asks questions of Maitreya. It's interesting because one of the things he says, I've heard a lot about duties and, you might say, more things connected with the material world, but I'm really interested in more transcendental topics, as the Prabhupada talks about in his purport today. And but what happens when Maitreya starts speaking, he starts talking about the creation again. Gets back to this. Now, so this comes up in the purport today. Why is discussion of these? He says here, what was that interesting verse or phrase that Prabhupada said about by hearing? Oh, here, pastimes of the Lord are very conducive to the hearers for self-realization in the field of devotional service. So then Prabhupada places this question: why not relish transcendent? Why can't we hear 10th canto? Why do we have to hear about the creation? So the reason we're hearing about the creation is because we're in the creation, and that's all we know. So by hearing about, Shukadeva Goswami made this same point in the beginning, in the second chapter, or maybe even the first chapter of the second canto, when he begins speaking. He also talks about this, starts talking about the creation. He talks about Virat Rupa. That's another place where the Virat Rupa is described. How Patala Loka is his feet, and so on. So that point is also made there, that we can't see transcendence, we can't really understand it. In one sense, you might say we can't really relate to it, but we can relate to the material world because that's what's within the realm of our experience. So Prabhupada says here, here he says, neophyte devotees will misunderstand such supreme transcendental activities of the Lord. Usually when I hear the word neophyte, I think like us, or at least like me, neophyte practicing sadhana bhakti. So even as a practitioners of sadhana bhakti, we're told to start at the beginning of the Bhagavatam, or start with Bhagavad Gita, try to get the philosophy down somewhat, and then the Bhagavatam, you start right at the beginning, you don't jump up to the 10th canto. But as Prabhupada, as this sentence unfolds, he says, neophyte devotees will misunderstand such supreme transcendental activities of the Lord, and therefore the Lord's pastimes in the material sphere related to creation, maintenance, and destruction are very relishable by the prakrita, the mundane devotees of the Lord. So, what is the prakrita bhakta? In the 11th canto, Krishna is explaining different kinds of devotees. So the bhakta, the prakrita bhakta is the devotee archayam eva haraye pujamya shraddhaye hate. What is it? Bhakteshu chanyeshu sabhakta prakrita smritaha. So the prakrita bhakta, which is what seems to be what Prabhupada is referring to here when he uses this term, prakrita bhakta. Prakrita means in relation to prakriti. Prakriti, prakrita. So the prakrita bhakta means he's still in mundane devotees of the Lord, Prabhupada says. So what is their characteristic? The characteristic of such devotees. They're called bhaktas, but prakrita bhaktas. And not exactly transcendental, probably would sometimes say. So their characteristic is that they worship a deity, archayam puja. They're into that. They have reverence and devotion, you can say, for the deity. But they don't see anything in relation to the deity. They don't see the transcendental position of the Vaishnavas or the greatness of the Vaishnavas. So this is not a good thing, of course. Sometimes I think myself, for example, we see pilgrims in India, how much piety they have. Like to go on to Tirupati, they go there, you know, in Tirupati, I've been there a couple of times, they have a big hall where everyone gets shaved up. So many people. Of course, that's a tradition when you go into a holy place to get shaved up. So they actually have the hair gets sold and it's made into wigs. So, but people go there and they, you know, they perform great austerities, walking on foot sometimes a long ways, and they'll walk up, go up the hill. You can take a bus up, of course, or a taxi, but many people walk up the hill. It's a difficult thing. And certainly they believe that this is the Lord. They're going to see God. And they definitely believe that. So I think, well, they have more faith than I have. I don't know if I have that kind of intense faith that they have. But still, they're considered in a lower position because they don't see the devotees in the same way. Of course, Krishna says that you can't worship me without worshiping my devotees. In fact, he says that worship of my devotees is greater than worship of myself. So that's extremely important. The second class devotee, of course, the second class devotee sees the devotees, the Vaishnavas, and sees Krishna, and sees the innocent and sees the demoniac. So that distinction is there on the Madhyam stage, the second stage of devotional service. So from here, so that's a little kind of the context of what's going on here. We're entering into this discussion of something related to the material world to help us make spiritual advancement. And now these verses that are coming up, they're quite interesting. Actually, last time I gave class, there was a question about, you know, the sense objects, for example. How can you have a sense object when the sense is not, or how can you have a sense when it's not experiencing anything? In other words, just like this idea of the adhyatmika, adhidaivika, and adhibhautik, it seems like you have to have all three of them. And in fact, you do. For anything to happen, you have to have all three of them. But we're hearing how these entities, sense objects and the senses, not the sense organs, but the senses themselves, like the organ is not the sense, actually. This sense of sight rests on the organ of the eye, and it's connected with the sun god. It also cannot work independent of the sun god. But so the sense itself and the sense object especially, these are actual entities of some kind. They're actual things, substantial things. So what we're going to be hearing in this chapter about how some of these things appear, and and the way that it's presented here, you really get the sense that the Virat Purusha is a living, conscious, real person. But the word is often used in relation to the Virat Rupa. The word Virat Rupa, the word there is Kalpana. Kalpana means imagination, actually. So it's a way of looking at the universe, and you might say imagining that this universe is a form of God. I mean, it is, of course, a form, but it's not Krishna's transcendental form. That's the idea. So here we get verses like you'll see coming up here. He says, from the mouth the palate became manifested. Oh, here we go. I'll read a different one. The living force being agitated by the Virat Purusha generated hunger and thirst. And when he, that means the Virat Purusha, desired to drink and eat, the mouth opened. So this is all, you know, it sounds like it's describing something that's actually happening, and there's this actual person, the Virat Purusha, that he wanted to eat, so he created, he generated hunger and thirst. These things, hunger and thirst, he generated them. And then the mouth opened. And later it's talking about the ears. It says he created the hearing because the sages wanted to hear. And you think, wait a minute, there aren't any sages alive yet. The sages haven't been created yet. No people have been created yet. But, of course, Krishna knows he's behind, or Lord Mahavishnu, he's behind the Bharat Purusha. So this is all kind of a metaphor. It has to be seen in some way as a metaphor. Now I know this is kind of a touchy subject because I know generally the idea about, you know, how much of the Bhagavatam is metaphorical. Usually we say, unless it's stated specifically that this is an allegory or this is metaphorical, then we should take it as direct, you know. But not metaphorical, but actually a description. But I don't see how you can not take this as a metaphor in some sense. Of course, something is going on here. Obviously, creation is taking place. But when you talk about sages having the desire to hear, well, that'll have to come later. That's not happening in this stage of creation. Brahma is going to be creating. This is still all in the context of Sarga, really, what Mahavishnu is doing. When Brahma takes over, he becomes empowered by Krishna. That is also, you can say, of course, ultimately Krishna is creating everything, or Mahavishnu, which of course, ultimately, yes, Krishna is creating everything, but through Mahavishnu. And then through Mahavishnu, or Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, is empowering Lord Brahma to create. So that comes later. So when he takes over, then we hear about people, of course, not only people, but all kinds of, was mentioned in this verse, one of them that I quoted, read earlier, moving and non-moving living entities. So that happens from Lord Brahma. He does all of that. So part of this is to give us, you know, a picture, the context of not being confused about who Krishna is when we get to the 10th canto. Because it's a difficult thing when one encounters this idea that this is God. In the Abrahamic tradition, we have this certain conception of God coming out of the Middle East. And in other parts of the world, of course, we have impersonal conceptions of God, where God is just everything in some abstract way, or God is just energy or light and so on, these ideas. Because people, they can't conceive of the idea that someone with a form like Krishna's, a beautiful two-handed form, looks like us. Obviously this is anthropomorphic. That would be there. That's a natural response that people have. You're just creating, you're making God. Well, this can't be God. How can this be God? Look at the universe. How can this come out of that boy? So we say, actually, he's much greater than that. The person who creates this universe, he's a part of a part of a part of a part of this boy. That's not his greatness, actually. That's just the material energy. And you hear about that through other scriptures, and even in the Bhagavatam, especially at the beginning, so that you'll be impressed by how great God is. And then you can learn that this great, great Maha, and Maha means great, it's Maha Vishnu, who's so great, the universe is, sometimes it's described that even the pores of Maha Vishnu are so great, that the universe is just like, you know, atomic in size in compared to the pores of his skin. So how great. I remember the first time I read Bhagavad Gita, where Prabhupada unfolds how long Mahavishnu lives. And it was really one of those aha moments. Like, whoa! You know, you hear how long just one of Brahma's days is, you know, so long, billions of years, just one of his days, and he lives for 311 trillion years. Who can, even the idea of trillion, I've explained this before, because we have a hard time grasping these things. Our mind just can't accommodate. I did a calculation once, I forget what it was, I did it years ago. It's like if you stacked pennies, a trillion pennies would go to the moon, or halfway to the moon, or to the moon and halfway back, or something. I forget what it was. It had something to do with distance to the moon when you start stacking a trillion pennies. So a trillion is a huge number, 311 trillion years. Ah. And that's just, you know, the insignificant creator, you might say, Mahavishnu. And of course, he's creating so many universes that are so vast. We hear in that pastime of Lord Brahma when he, you know, went to see Krishna in Dwarka, and Krishna said, which Lord Brahma? These Brahmas coming from all these universes with so many heads. This is the smallest universe, and look out, we can't even figure out where the end is. Does it even have an end or not? It's so, so vast, so beyond our conception. So this is all to impress upon us. Like Prabhupada would say, they say God is great, but do they really know how great he is? So it's repeated again, and especially in the first three cantos. And as we'll see later, like Vidura and Maitreya, they discuss the creation. Maitreya directly talks about it. And then in the context of their conversation, we hear about Kapila Dev, and Kapila Dev talks to his mother about it. So this, it's really meant to be impressed upon us how great Krishna's expansions are. This is all, again, in the context of understanding the ashraya, the sthanam, poshanam, utaya, nirodha, and so on, the creation, maintenance, and destruction. Every morning, of course, when we sing the Govinda prayers, so it's said there, pasyanti panti pa. Pasyanti, panti, kalyanti, chiram vijaganti. So the universe, Krishna is, his senses, of course, he can do anything with any of his senses, that's stated there. But pasyanti means he's seeing. Chiram is it means different things. Sometimes it just means for a long time. But in this context, it means always or eternally. The universe is, he's always seeing everything that's going on in every corner of the universe. Govinda. Of course, Govinda through Mahavishnu, you might say, because Krishna's not really looking at this universe. He's looking at Radharani. She's more attractive than the universe. So pasyanti panti. Panti means to take care of. Like pa, this syllable pa, like gopa, gopal. So pasyanti, see. Panti, to maintain, gopa, pasyanti panti kalyanti, in kala, like kala means ansha kala, the expansions of the Lord. You have primary expansions and secondary expansions, or the full and then secondary expansions. So kala, that's what the idea of this kalyanti means. All these things are coming out of him. He's seeing them and he's maintaining them. And that's this little boy. We have this painting of Krishna standing with a calf next to him playing a flute, and all universes are all around. So he's at the center. He's the focus of all of this. So that's why we keep getting these things. We have to work our way up to the 10th canto. Of course, we don't have to wait. Prabhupada gave us the Krishna book so we can understand these things. We can relish. We can learn, we can always get a stronger foundation in understanding the greatness of Krishna. So we don't get confused. Because this same person who's doing this, he's enjoying with his friends. So we can understand the gopas and gopis and he's crying in front of his mother, running in fear of his mother. We can understand, isn't that an ordinary thing? We think that what the gopas and gopis and Krishna are doing, somehow, you know, we have a picture in our mundane minds of what's going on. But it's in a completely different sphere of reality. That somehow we have to, that has to sink in. And how part of it sinking in is to realize just how great Krishna is. We think we can understand Krishna because, well, yeah, look at, he's just playing with boys. I know, I understand what that is. I do as a boy myself, and I played with other boys. And so we think, yeah, that's something I can relate to in one sense. I can understand spirit because I can understand what Krishna is doing, transcendence. But try to understand in the context of this same person as the person who's creating Mahavishnu, who's creating all of these things, who has such extraordinary power. I remember devotees used to say, the amount of energy it takes Mahavishnu to create the material world is an eye blink for him. He doesn't exert himself. So, and he's coming from Krishna. Krishna can create so many Mahavishnus in a moment also. So anyway, that's a little something. Continue tomorrow on the same purport. In translation again, after separating the different universes, the gigantic universal form of the Lord, Mahavishnu, which came out of the causal ocean, the place of appearance of the first Purusha avatar, entered into each of the separate universes, desiring to lie on the created transcendental water, Garbhodaka. Garbha means womb. So he lies down in the womb of the universe, you might say, and creates so many things from there. Any questions or comments?
In Bhagavatam 3.26.32, it says that when the sexual organ of the Lord was agitated, then the first creation was the sound. Mm-hmm. Now you are saying the sages are desiring and then the sense organ to hear and then this object will be appearing? Is that how the whole creation? I mean, I'm going backward or forward? I'm just confused.
Yeah, well, that's why I'm saying that, this is giving us... What is it? Let's see the verse. Oh, here it is. It's coming up, text 22. By development of the desire of the great sages to know, the ears, the power of hearing, the controlling deity of hearing, and the objects of hearing became manifested. The great sages desire to hear about the self. Now, I mean, Prabhupada puts it in the sense that the sages were already there and they wanted to hear, and that's what happened. And that seems to be what's stated here, but that's not usually the way we hear about things unfolding.
Got it.
So I don't know, what can I say? The Bhagavatam is Krishna, I can't understand.
What number is it,
22? 22, yeah, in this chapter. He actually, in the end of the purport, Prabhupada says, he basically repeats, the great sages were interested in hearing about the Lord through Vedic knowledge and nothing more. That is the beginning of oral reception of knowledge. Of course, it doesn't say it's the beginning of the sound, it says it's the beginning of oral reception. So it seems like it's like a projection that the sages will want to know. So for their benefit, Krishna knows they're going to want to know to hear Krishna Katha. So he's going to give them the facility to do that. And that's one way of looking at it. Projecting out and looking back. Yes, Prabhu.
Thank you for the class, Prabhu. I actually had a thought specifically in regards to this very subject matter, so it's interesting that you brought that up. I was thinking the same thing. And Mahavishnu, being the universal form, when he revealed his universe, Krishna reveals the universal form to Arjuna, Kala isn't depicted in a linear way. Past, present, and future are all jumbled up. He sees everything happening at once.
Yeah.
So, if time isn't linear in actuality and in truth, then this would make perfect sense that, the desire of the sages to hear, there's no difference between the past or the present and the future. It just kind of happens. So I think that we're trying to understand time in a linear way when Kala, in regards to Mahavishnu, doesn't function in that way, at least how you know, he revealed himself to Arjuna.
Right. Yeah. Mahavishnu, of course, Mahavishnu is situated in the spiritual world. So there's no time there. Oh, when things are explained. We have to put everything in time and space because we exist. We're confined. Our experience is delimited by these boundaries. We're bound up in time and space. So we can't but think that way as long as we're still in conditioned conscious state of consciousness. So for our benefit, things are stated in a certain way so that we can get some grasp about what's being explained.
Yeah. I also had another thought. When you mentioned that Krishna is running away from Mother Yashoda in actual mm-hmm. fear, I remember I was in Ekachakra and it was Varahadev's appearance day. And there was a Maharaj, he's from Russia, I believe he's a disciple of Indrayumna Maharaj. And he had recently taken sannyas and he was explaining how when Varahadev jumped into the ocean and he came out and he started shaking, he explained that boars don't shake because boars shake. They shake because Krishna is their original boar and he decided to shake in this way. So when we're thinking this is an original, an ordinary thing, well, no, it's actually Krishna is the origin of this, right? This a boy running away in fear from his mother, you know? So is it really ordinary in actuality or is it original? Mm. That's kind of my thought.
Everything traces back to Krishna. Adi Varaha. He's called the original boar, Lord Varaha.
They are Pran Govinda Das and there's a flower. I want to touch it. So the leg appeared, like active senses just appeared. And then my hand to touch it appeared. And then I want to smell it, so my nose just popped. I just keep. Like, how exactly?
Don't expect to understand it. As again, there's some metaphorical element here, obviously. How could a sage, you know, it's like somehow he's existing, but he doesn't have anything in parts of his body? What? That's not really the point. Krishna is creating these things. In fact, there's that interesting, I think somewhere it's stated how we don't leave a body until there's a body waiting for us, something like that. And probably makes that point, right? So what, there's some body somewhere? Which body? The one that's going to be in the embryo? I don't know. It's like everything you say, you can ask more questions. So many. When you really start thinking about things. And that's, of course, Prabhupada would make that point when he would say that everything is achintya, actually. Not just, this is Krishna's, and the material world is Krishna's achintya shakti. It's all in one sense, too. It's we could use these terms false or unreal and so on. We say it's not false, but I was just reading, I think, Prabhupada's introduction to the Chaitanya Charitamrita, or maybe one of the early purports. He was using the word unreal. So what's the difference between false and unreal? It seems like they're synonyms. But it's unreal because it's creating an illusion. What it's made of is Krishna's energy, so that's real. That's a real thing. But it's creating an illusion. Just like in a cinema house, as Prabhupada would say, it's real light on the screen, but there's not real people right there in the theater. So in a sense, it's reality because there's real light, but there's not real people there. So similarly, the material world is not what we think it is. Of course, even modern science tells us that, right? It's mostly space, just these little particles moving around at near light speed. So that we can't really understand it. Achintya. That was also, I think, I was just reading that recently, where Prabhupada was saying how we can't understand even the material world. So how do we think we can understand Krishna, who is beyond this material world? The only way to access that information is by hearing transcendental sound coming from that place. Golokera Prema Dhan Harinam Sankirtan. the holy name and everything. The Vedas, everything is coming from them. All that information that doesn't come out of this material world, and you can't speculate your way to bring it down to your level. So there are things that are just, they're beyond us. We can't understand them. And even, you know, our perception can also improve, of course, over time. We can understand more subtle things. We live in such gross consciousness, generally speaking. We're raised in, especially Western civilization, so gross and hard. And I mean, just think of Western medicine. It's so barbaric, actually, when you get down to it. I really don't like it, I have to say. I don't want to criticize any of our doctors, but all this cutting and poking and all these, you know. Prabhupada didn't like it either. You know, Prabhupada really didn't like it. He had to be forced, practically dragged in an emergency, have some emergency procedure. So it had some benefits. Maybe I'll give you that in certain situations. But generally, it's very crude. It is actually quite crude. So this whole, you know, as Kali Yuga progresses, many subtleties, even we see now in our culture, so degraded it's become over the last, even just last few years. So degraded. And it's going downhill fast. Where it's going to end up, it's hard to say. So, you know, when we're part of that, in a sense, we're situated within it. That's the atmosphere, the environment that we live in. So naturally it has an effect. That we have to be, of course, that's why we have to have good sadhana, and we have to always fortify ourselves. We don't become too affected by that. And then we can, again, we can understand these things better. If we can somehow shelter ourselves from this powerful influence of the times that we live in. Sometimes you may have heard, sometimes people say, for example, you know, why did so many Germans go along with what was going on during the Holocaust? And they say, well, if I were there, I wouldn't have done it. But it doesn't work that way, you know. If the majority of people, a large majority of people did it, you would have been one of them too, right? So it shows how the situation influences us so heavily, you know. That now there's the practice of looking back at people in former times and condemning them and wanting to get away, you know, this whole thing in America of knocking down all the statues and all that. But if you were living in that time, you would have been like that too. That's just the nature, that's the way things are. We're products of our historical times. So that's affecting us, you know, in so many ways we may not even understand how we react. I mean, I know, understand. I look how I was raised and the things that happen so early in your life in Western culture. Especially, I would say, a very powerful force is the sexuality of Western civilization. Right from the beginning, I mentioned this boy-girl thing, you know, starting in elementary school. And I think a devotee's raised, I don't know if you've ever read the Bhakti Vikas Swami, he did a book on, I forget what it's called, but it talks about devotees who were raised in really traditional Indian cultures. What a difference. What a difference they lived. All their festivals were holy days, and you know, the whole culture was about Krishna. Even though they weren't necessarily Gaudiya Vaishnavas, but they lived in that. And then what I was raised in, I think, and the things that were on TV, and just the whole, how that influences our consciousness. Anyway, I'm going off on a tangent here, but this is all in the context of how do we understand these things. Well, it's difficult because our minds have been so conditioned. In so many ways, our subtle things are hard to understand. Just like sometimes you say, well, how can people think that way about certain things? Just like how can people not see the evil of animal slaughter or the evil of abortion? How can somebody not see that? Well, of course, it's their karma. That's, you know, it's not only coming from their current civilization, but it's coming from their past lives also. We become conditioned by what we've done in the past. That's one of the consequences of karma. Not only do you have to suffer, but it affects the way you think in your future lives also. So that's one reason people just, they just don't get it. Things that we think is so obvious, they don't get it. It has no effect on them. So there are subtleties that we can also, we're not, certain things that have no effect on us, you can say, we're also victims. Why don't you get it? That's why Prabhupada over and over and over again, and he was in his lectures, be serious, this is a real thing, don't take it lightly, and so on. Because it's not getting through our thick skulls a lot of times, so he has to repeat it. Soma Prabhu, did you want to say something?
Well, just a quick comment that about not understanding is when Maharaj Yudhisthira was so despondent after the battlefield of Kurukshetra and he went to see Bhishma Dev, one of the things that Bhishma Dev told him is, you can never fully understand the plan of the Lord, but you have to surrender to it.
Right, right, that's true. There's that, certainly that aspect of it, what Krishna is doing. We take on principle that whatever is happening to us is Krishna's mercy, but we don't always understand how it is, especially if we're really suffering somehow. Why is Krishna doing this to me? I don't understand. But we have to keep that faith, we have to keep that positive attitude, you know, that this is Krishna's mercy somehow, whether I understand it or not. I think we should, it's 9 o'clock.
Yeah.
This is when I turn into a pumpkin.
Jaya.
Srila Prabhupada ki jaya.